FNR, Football Nation Radio.
El Hadji off, at pace.
Watch the movement of Kiel going to the far post.
He rose so high.
The High Performance Show with Chris Appleford, Bill Tate and Keegan Ziada on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the High Performance Show here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. What a big show we've got ahead for you today. We've got Mick Chiavetti on the program. He's the strength and conditioning coach from the Dandenong Thunder. We're going to talk to him right off the top of the show. And later on in the program, we have got Dr. Craig Duncan on the show. Big guest. He is the head of sports science for the Socceroos. Plenty to talk to him about, namely those glasses on the plane. That'll be a good start. But certainly going to talk to him about the physical demands placed on the body during a football match. Does it differ from position to position? And how we can train for different positions. We'll have a good chat to him later on in the show. But first, let's introduce my two co-hosts as always. Keegan Ziada, how are you, mate? And Bill Tate, how are you, mate? Oh, Bill, hello, how are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'd say it every week, but I'm going to get these buttons worked out at some stage, but I've figured it out.
No, mate, you're killing it. Don't worry about it.
Keegan, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. For the second week in a row. You try and shut me up, mate.
That's right, mate. Get the hint, mate. Get the hint. All right. Let's cross to the Dandenong Thunder, and we're going to have a chat to the strength and conditioning coach there, Mick Chiavetti. Mick, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure.
Hey, mate, tell me about the strength and conditioning program out there at the Dandenong Thunder. You were in the NPL2 competition last season. You have now been promoted into the NPL1 competition. Congratulations. Can you give us a bit of an insight into the program you ran out there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, I think just to start, I guess, hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it? So we tend to reflect back on what went well and draw conclusions about what we did perfectly, but yep. I think there's always a little bit of timing and luck involved. But yeah, look, we had a fair bit of success. I think we had some players. We had some Socceroos. Obviously, we had Simon Colosimo, Rodrigo Vargas, and Christian Sarkis, all former Socceroos playing in the team, and quite a long season ahead of us. So we thought that the physical preparation was going to be really important. We wanted to get maximising minutes we could get out of those. Those seasoned players. So setting up systems that were going to let us track and monitor the group was really important. So not so much, flogging them on the track and getting them super, super fit, but being able to make sure that we had systems that they were used to and, we could keep track of where they were at physically. So that, and if we had to pull it back or modify it, we had a way of doing that. We had a system for doing that. So, yeah, we were really fortunate. We went almost 6 months without having a single soft tissue injury, which is unheard of in NPL football. So, we were really fortunate that some of those systems that we put in place worked well for us.
Hi, Mick. Keegan here. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Keegan, thank you very much, mate. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Discussing hindsight, what did you implement during your promotion year that I guess you felt had the biggest contribution or impact in keeping those players healthy?
Yeah, okay. Well, what we did was, as you know, with any high-performance program, you can kind of get carried away with data collection and bringing in interventions and having a number of different things that you think are going to add value. But at the end of the day, it comes down to being able to make good decisions with the information and the data you collect. There's no point collecting stuff just for the sake of doing it. So having now had some time in sort of elite footy and then women's basketball as well, and I'd kind of seen what had worked for different sports and what ended up being a bit of fluff and just getting in the way. So I'd say that probably the best thing that we did was set up just a simple wellness system that I set up through TeamApp. So basically just asked the players to log, four really basic questions about how they were feeling. And I didn't ask them to do it every day, which is what's traditionally done. I just asked them to do it before their first session of the week. And because the commitment from their side of things is quite small, compliance was excellent. So I had players, around about 95% compliance, filling out their wellness every single Monday. And then I coupled that with just the really basic groin squeeze that we did once a week. So they'd all come into the club and sit down on my little blue mat I had set up. They'd do a groin squeeze, and if that was down 20% on what they were used to and their wellness was showing any red flags, then we simply modified the Monday session and then made some small changes to the Wednesday as well. So two measures, I think, played a really significant part.
Can you tell us what the groin squeeze is?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So it's just a...
So you're not squeezing groins, is that? just clarifying that for your listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, look, so really simple test, actually. It's there's some research now suggesting that when you get fatigued and your body's not recovering from a game, that your ability to produce strength is reduced. So a really simple strength test is the old groin squeeze, where you take a pressure cuff that you would normally use to take blood pressure, and you pump that up to about 40 on the little scale, and you get the athlete to sit down on their bum, kind of like you're in a crunch position, if you think about an old school sort of crunch position, and you place that pressure cuff right between the knees, and you just ask them to give it a nice big squeeze as hard as they can, and you get a score. You know, players get about 200 millimeters of mercury, which is a strength measure. So that's just a basic pressure cuff. You can buy them from a chemist. You throw it between the knees and they give it a squeeze, and we track it over time. And if we see it coming down, it means that for some reason around their hips and their core and their groin, they're starting to get fatigued, which opens up the chance of injury. So if they're showing fatigue, then there's no point doing more training. So we want to give them a little bit more of a chance to recover before we throw them under the bus. So, that's the groin squeeze.
Okay. I know you mentioned some of the older players, the likes of Sarkis and Vargas and Colosimo. What kind of strategies or did you have in place for maybe the older guys versus younger guys, or did you have something in there to kind of keep those more experienced guys healthy over the long season when you include the cup matches and obviously a long pre-season?
Mm. Well, we were a little bit stiff to draw Bentley as our first cup match, so that lasted a whole 1 week, our FFA Cup campaign. So, we took them to 120 minutes and then they pipped us. So the cup draw wasn't an issue. We were down to playing one game a week pretty much straight away, which is probably a good thing in the end. But, yeah, look, guys like Simon, what we did was we set up almost like a fortnightly schedule where we chopped them out. Whether they felt good or not, we gave them one night off a week in the fortnight pretty much, and they'd usually still come to training, still do a squeeze, get on a foam roller and like do a roll and stretch and spend some extra time with the physio. So we never let anybody miss an entire training session. We wanted to be doing everything as a group. I'm a big believer that you know football matches, I mean, we get pretty crazy with the sports science stuff, but it's often one above the shoulders. And if we can get everybody buying into the same message, if guys start getting a night off because they're in their own special little group, that starts eating into this culture of, you know, everybody doing their, you know, filling out their questionnaires or doing recovery, and you start to have these segregated groups. So they, even though they had the night off, those boys still came to training, and they'd spend some extra time with the physio and maybe do some flush running, basically just some running up and down the touch line just to flush the legs. They'd have a stretch and go home a little early. We used like a rolling fortnight for those players because they were, you know, in that high risk category.
So Mick, it's Bill. I'm wondering terms of moving up through the levels into the new league. What are your thoughts on, you know, you've obviously got a really clear and, you know, quite targeted approach to the things that you do well, and that's been a really common theme that we've seen. It's, you know, not a lot of brilliance, It's not these fancy, far-out ideas that the great people do. It's simple things really well. Are there things that you'll be looking to shift now? And have you identified any things that will need to progress based on the, you know, the standard and expectation as you move up?
Yeah, absolutely. I said to the boys at the start of the year that if we approach this season, we're not going to get the same result because we're obviously in a much more competitive league and the physical demands are going to be a lot higher. So we kind of did some stuff during the preseason last year where, you know, we did some field-based strength and conditioning stuff where we made people work on, you know, like their just basic core strength and glute strength and all these little things that you can do on the field without any equipment, kind of just like a strength program on the field. And I didn't really clamp down around players doing things away from training. You know, like I didn't make it compulsory that guys lifted did any traditional strength training away from the football field. Whereas this year I've kind of given guys the, not an ultimatum, but I've sort of said, look, if we're going to be more professional, then we need to approach it that way. So one thing I've put in place is compulsory strength training. So two times a week, the guys in their own time have to get into their local gym and just do some of those fundamental exercises that are going to keep them injury free and keep them strong in all the right places, as our athletes these days do. And that seemed to, it seems to have been brought on quite well. Like, everybody's open to that because they want to do it. They just typically don't know how to go about it. So strength training is one thing. The other thing is we need to get better at monitoring the players. So now every player will wear a GPS unit this season. So for our two major training sessions and our games, we'll monitor high-speed running and total distance so that we can just get a little bit better at knowing, you know, who's done what and where they're at with their training loads.
And is that something, the GPS stuff, something that you've done a little bit of and now you're sort of, you know, they're getting an understanding of it and now you want to progress it a bit, or is that a brand new concept to them?
No, I had some, I'll call them high-risk players, but I had some players who have had a history of soft tissue injury and sort of getting to certain parts of the season and falling apart in their previous careers. So we basically, when the players walk in, I don't know them from a bar of soap. So I say, here, fill out this little bit of paper and tell me about your injury history. And then you find out from guys like Brandon Barnes, although he scored 75 goals in two seasons, tends to have some significant issues around June, July, every season of his life. So I said, well, that's not a coincidence. We need to work out why this is happening. So Barnsley actually wore a GPS unit all last season and were able to sort of pull back on the training loads for him when he was showing signs of fatigue. We had two or three boys doing that, and I managed to get some useful info, and I think we're ready to maybe pull the trigger on all the players using that.
Hey, Mick, when you talk about strength training for your players going into the gym two times a week, what specific exercises are you talking about? Are you talking about the stock standard big multi-joint movements like squats and bench press and deadlifts, or is it something more specific than that?
I think the term that you mentioned there, specific, is probably a little bit misunderstood these days, and I'm probably more of a traditionalist in the gym, and it's not necessarily the stuff you're going to get on Instagram, unfortunately, or on YouTube. It's not going to make your Facebook famous, but it's going to make you strong and keep you healthy. So yeah, I look for the big movements and bang for buck sort of stuff. There are some things that are kind of on the edge between functional training, which is a bit of an overused term in sport these days. But I know that the guys don't want to be in there for too long, so I try and pick those movements that are going to be multi-joint and that can be performed safely. So another big thing I do is, like, I'll say, okay, I need every guy to be doing a squat at the start of their workout, for example. Let's just say that's the movement. What I actually do is build some autonomy in the program, and I give them maybe three variations of the squat that they can self-select when they go in, because then it kind of makes it feel like it's their choice and they're carving their own path. And from my experience, that tends to allow or produce better retention. Like, if you give somebody a specific recipe and then they're not really enjoying it, they'll stop doing it. Whereas if you give them choice, it tends to work a little bit better. So yeah, the big lifts, I think squats are important. Some sort of single leg hamstring dominant or glute dominant exercise, so bridges and hip extensions and all the things we get exposed to. Obviously, the big injury risks are sort of hip, knee, ankle. So anything that requires single leg stability and strength is going to be really football specific.
Mick, bit of a two-part question. First one, off piggybacking off Chris's comment, how do you monitor whether the guys are completing their gym programs, or is it just kind of a buy-in, collective understanding amongst the group? And second part of that, sorry, is how do you, obviously the boys have been working hard, how do you combat the Xmas period in regards to all the work they've done before Christmas so they don't come back and kind of undo all that time on the track? So
yeah, it's a good question. Look, the strength program is going to be a tough one. Like, I've just, to be completely honest, we've just implemented it this year, and I had to be reined in. Like, I actually said to Andy Vargas, who's the senior coach, I want to do compulsory morning weight sessions and everyone's going to meet me at the gym and I don't care, we're going to be professional, we're going to do it. And he had to kind of rein me in and say, mate, we've got guys coming from the other side of town and it might not work. So I conceded and said, okay, let's do these remote programs. So in terms of monitoring them, I use Visual Coaching Pro, which is a software. So basically I can write a program for someone on my computer and they can open it from their mobile phone. So we're going to be using that, and I can basically jump in and check whether somebody's filled out their program. And if they haven't, then I can sort of touch base with them, work out if they're doing it or not. And I think that's as good as it's going to get. I think if we create a athletic professional culture where people talk about their programs and they talk about, you know, where they're up to and if they've had a new PB or what they're struggling with, it starts to rub off, you know. And I've already got five or six guys that regularly do strength training already, and we talk about lifts and we talk about new PBs and what's helping them with their football. And I see guys that aren't, maybe haven't bought into it yet, coming over and wanting to get into the discussion, and I see that that's having an impact. So if I can just support the guys that are doing it really well, I think it'll rub off onto the others, and we should get good retention. But yeah, we're using a software program called Visual Coach Pro.
And how can players come back from Christmas without having put on a few kilograms?
I think coaches is one we have to worry about that one. I set a little program. I'm really big on giving them a break. Like, I think it's a bloody long season, and if you've got guys finishing up on, like, you know, the 20, whatever we are on the Friday, the 24th, and then coming back on the 2nd or 3rd, and it's only a week, I really think that kind of wanes in them later on in the preseason. So we're giving them a good sort of 2 weeks off, and I'll just set them up with a little remote training program, which basically says, you know, here's a stack of sessions. Here's maybe five different runs, and here's five different basic sort of football conditioning drills. Just do two of each a week in your own time, and fill out this little diary, and then they'll have to give me that diary at the end of the holiday break. So that allows them to, you know, pick sessions that they want, do them when they want, and then as long as they fill out a little diary. And, but, you know, it's just pretty easy for a player to fill out a little bit of paper on the last day of the holidays. And
yeah.
Thanking him. Pretty sure Christian Sarkis last year had it written all in the same coloured pen. And I said, mate, who are you kidding? So, yeah, look, bit of onus on them, and a little bit of free choice for them, and hopefully we come back in good nick.
Hey, Mick, thanks so much for joining us here on the High Performance Show on Football Nation Radio. We really appreciate it, and best of luck with the NPL 1 season next year with Dandenong Thunder.
No, I love what you guys are doing. Keep spreading the good word, and yeah, hopefully we see the real game in Australia sort of taking next levels on the physical development front.
Thanks, mate. Mick Chiavitti there, the strength and conditioning coach for the Dandenong Thunder. They've got a big season ahead of them, no doubt about that. We're going to take a break, Keegan and Bill. After the break, we're going to chat about what we can learn from other sports. Keegan, you're going to bring some stuff from the AFL world, perhaps, and what's going on at Roeville Sports Academy. And, of course, Bill there is always in charge of everything nowadays down at the VIS. So we should get plenty of good stuff from Bill there. We're going to take a break here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Welcome back to the High Performance Program here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at FNR_radio. You can follow me at Chris Appleford. You can follow Keegan at KZiata7.
That's the one.
And you can follow Bill Tate at ROW Tate, TAIT. So make sure you follow us there out in the Twitter universe. Now, tomorrow's Football Extra program. It's a massive two-hour special tribute to the late Johnny Warren from 9 a.m. Of course, make sure you tune in. Big guests: Atidi Abanyi, Adrian Alston, John Watkiss, Jim Fraser, Ray Bartz are all on the show. Big special tribute there to Johnny Warren. But let's get on with the program here on the High Performance Program. Of course, football is the sport. We love it. We know that. But if we're not looking outward and taking the best bits that we can from other sports as well, then we're being very insular and we're not going to develop anywhere near as quickly as we possibly can. So it's always a great idea to see what other sports are doing, what other coaches are doing, what other players are doing, and then try and integrate that into football in the best way as possible. So, Bill, you're down there at the VIS. I'm sure you've got a ton of ideas about what you guys do in your Olympic sports programs down there, even the netball program that you've got down there, and what could be transferred across into football programs around, you know, state league levels, community levels, and even in the NPL levels.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's really funny. I think probably the thing that we see is, you know, with a lot of the Olympic sports that are more individual or small team, is that I guess it's a tighter ability for coaches and this performance staff to work directly with athletes one-on-one and get that really clear and very thorough individual approach to the training. And I guess, you know, I see if you're futurizing this, I imagine as it becomes easier and easier for coaches in big teams like football, but also like netball that we see and the hockey program, particularly at the VIS, it's about trying to take some of the learnings from the small sports where, you know, those interpersonal relationships and the tightness in which information is managed and adjustments are made on a micro scale, that's going to become easier and easier. And Mick sort of touched on that a little bit. I think you said, look, I've cut out some of the noise around the monitoring because it is difficult at times to do in big groups. So the challenge is how do you do it at a you know, at an elite level or at an exceptional high performance level with big groups. So I see that's probably one of the biggest areas that will change over time. I reckon even, you know, knowledge of, and Keegan will be able to give a better opinion on this, you know, a lot of the AFL teams have tried to do a lot of that stuff, that individual load management on a day-to-day, session-to-session basis, and have found it too hard. And it's not because it's a bad idea, because it's a really good idea from a physiological point of view and a development point of view, but it's just really hard to do on a large scale right now. So technology is going to keep improving. You know, I'm looking at my little Garmin watch that tracks everything I do every day, and I can, you know, make that decision for myself. And that will change, I think, over time.
Keegan, you've obviously been in the world of AFL with the AFL women's program down there at the Demons. You're at Roeville Sports Academy, where they have a number of teams playing down there and training down there. What can you bring to the football program?
I think, obviously, like you mentioned, the passion is football. But within the performance or the high-performance world, the likes of AFL and rugby are probably the pinnacles, and because they place so much emphasis on it. So in terms of job opportunities, they're probably a lot easier to get. Touching on Bill's, the data, I think the biggest thing that I've seen is, and it probably crosses over between the AFLW, which is kind of new, and then obviously working with the adolescent kids every week, is I think from the likes of basketball, AFL and rugby, I guess understanding the importance of athletic development and the physical development, that doesn't just happen. You have to invest time in that. And I think it comes back down to the load management, which is what Bill's talking about with the data. But I didn't really appreciate the, how well they manage loads, you know, the recommendations of more than one game a week. You know, I know in the long term, in the short term, you know, you think more touches on the ball, but, you know, there's been a lot of research behind if you play more than one game, the risk goes up by 5 times for an adolescent athlete. And basketball, soccer, they're pretty bad for this only because it's – I know kids within my soccer program who finish NPL season, 2 weeks off, trials start again, a week later, back in.
Yeah.
And so there's no time for them actually to rest, recover, develop, invest in other areas of their development, whether it be, you know, physical development, even just switching off for a bit. And we wonder why adolescent athletes burn out. You know, I think working within the school, when you talk to the cricketers or the AFL or the basketball, netball, they're less, I guess, likely to early specialise. They like to, you know, a lot of kids will play AFL and soccer as well. AFL or basketball or cricket. Soccer tends to be early specialisation, you know, 6 to 7, that's all they do. And it's becoming more and more. And I was one of them, you know. There were times where I was playing 2 games in a day.
Yeah.
And you know,
I did that.
Yeah, that just catches up to you. And I think the load monitoring, and like Bill said, I think it just adding restrictions. I know cricket came out with an adolescent bowling restriction, I think, which has helped with the stress-related injuries. And I think we need to start learning little strategies so that, one, kids don't get burnt out, but two, the best ability for a kid is their availability and to be able to develop and stay training regularly.
So, Keegan, do you reckon, from your experience, it seems to me that football, particularly soccer, is such a skill-focused game. And it's almost like, you know, if you look at the top end, the skill side of it is so maxed out. Like, there are sports where you say, look, that's going to continue to get more and more skillful over time. I think we've seen that in AFL in the last even 15 years, like the ruthlessness with passing. Well, you know, that's been, if you like, pretty close to capacity. So if you looked at it at a very simplistic level, if the skill side of it, if there's a small differential there, then the big differential is going to be management, availability, load, fitness, you know, capacity to be able to continue to produce those skills consistently under fatigue, Would that be a fair sort of really broad brush analysis of it?
Yeah, I think so, Bill. Like you said, I think, you know, you can hone on the skills, but I think, you know, if you look at the game and you attack other areas, maybe it's, you know, game sim or match like IQ, football IQ, understanding the game better,
yeah.
You know, building a, moving more efficiently. You're then able to execute the skill because you're not wasting energy, or you have the strength to be able to repeatedly execute the skill. So it actually cleans up the technical aspect of the game too. So I do understand the, you know, how important this skill is, but I think all sports require skill. But I think at times the football, we get honed in on it, that we're different. You know, that that we need to be, and it is a very high skill game, but so is basketball, and so is, you know, cricket in their own way, and so they've all got their own skill development.
Bill, you touched on how difficult it is on a mass scale. So you've got a squad of say 30 players, and you know, if you're going to have this individualized attention with each player like you do in individual sports, you know, you're going to have to hire 30 sports scientists, or, you know, maybe small groups. But maybe the education of the athlete themselves might be the next step, so they can analyze the data themselves. They can, you know, make adjustments to their own program themselves. Is that kind of
You've hit the nail on the head. The challenge is with technology evolving, as I mentioned, you know, I can do it myself on my watch. So anyone can do it. It's the education and it's the culture around it. Now, that's the challenge, is shifting the culture around being prepared to say, well, not everyone's going to do the same thing tonight, because you don't need to do that. You need to do this, and this is the best thing for you, and this is how we're going to optimize something for you. That's difficult in a big team. If you can bring the culture along so they can accept that, and bring the education along so that they understand it, then it's actually not that hard to do. And it's funny, like a bit of what we're doing up at this camp up here is spending a lot of time, you know, in the hills doing training, but spending the nights going through that stuff and spending time trying to teach them that sort of stuff. It's probably just got to have that little cultural shift that that's actually something that, you know, there's an appetite for it, it's important. And once that happens, then actually the mechanics of doing the individual approach is actually pretty easy now compared to, say, 10 years ago when the software just couldn't keep up.
We're going to take a break now, boys, but any footballers out there listening in and want to take their game to the next level, educate yourselves and really figure out your body and really figure out what works best for you. After the break, we're going to chat with Dr. Craig Duncan. He's the Socceroos Head of Sports Science here on the High Performance Show on FNR, Football Nation Radio. Welcome back to the High Performance Show here on FNR, Football Nation Radio. It's been a great program so far. We had a good old chat there about what we can learn from other sports and bring it into the football realm to take players' games to the next level. And earlier in the night, we spoke to Mick Chiavitti, the S&C coach at the Dandenong Thunder. They run a fantastic strength and conditioning program for an NPL 2 club that's just been promoted into NPL 1. It's virtually a professional program without having professional footballers there. It's great to see. But now we're going to chat to the Socceroos Head of Sports Science, Dr. Craig Duncan. Craig, thanks very much for joining the program.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Mate, we want to talk a bit about the physical demands that players experience during a game of football. Can you give us a bit of an insight into what the body actually goes through when you play a game of football?
Well, basically, I mean, a lot of people just concentrate on the total distance that's covered, and that can be anywhere from, you know, 9.5 to 13 kilometres, you know, for the game. And that's not really an enormous amount of a physiological load. I mean, the bigger load is what's carried out at high-speed distance, and then also the continual change of direction and change in momentum, which really... it's probably the most fatiguing factor in football.
So do these loads on people's body, players' bodies, do they differ considerably from position to position, or is it pretty much same?
Look, yes, they definitely do differ from position to position, and how you structure and how you are playing tactically, and whether you have, you keep a lot of the ball or whatever system you're playing, the loads will change in respect to the positions, and it also changes in respect to the quality of play. You won't see much difference in, you know, from a you know, from a lower level competition to a higher level competition in total distance, because that is really not that an important factor. What you'll see is the difference will be in the high intensity actions, and that's where the major changes are, and that's probably the most fatiguing factor.
Hi, Craig. Keegan here. Thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks, Keegan.
Would you just be able to break down, I guess, the positional demands, and I guess what are some of the characteristics of different positions, whether it be, like you talked about, your sprints or your Axel D-cell, or who's doing more running? Would you be able to just give us a little bit more insight on that?
Sure. I mean, you know, the wide players, and again, depending on what system you play, but the players wide will need to be physiologically more, you know, there's a physiological characteristics for those, which would include that you'd expect them to do a certain distance in high speed as compared to, and it would be quite different to, your central players. So what we try and do is physiologically profile positions. And so particularly in international football, so a coach, depending on how he wants to play tactically, that then he can look at that position and know what he wants physiologically out of that. And then the player just becomes part of the process. They either can do it or they can't. And then we make a judgment whether it's only because they haven't been physiologically prepared for it, or, you know, sometimes people are just not capable of what we require in that position. It's just how it is, I suppose.
So if I'm a coach, do I then need to actually individualise and take into consideration when it comes to recovery or, you know, the session, based on position?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I just caught a little bit of what you're talking about before in respect to individualized load management. I don't think there's any other way, and that's not rocket science. I mean, I've done that, you know, from the start of my career. It has to be that way. Football is a team sport played by individuals. Everyone is individually, physiologically different, and it's just whether how you go about your system and your strategy. It's very, very easy to get people fit. That's simple. But it's the management of that, and how do you get people to perform optimally when they have to perform, you know, throughout different stages of the season. So yes, very much. You've got to look at the, you know, a wide player, and just naturally, sometimes in training they will do extensively more work in training because it might be a drill, and it's just a matter of drawing the attention to you know, the coaches that they have to be aware of this when you create your session and you model your session. So I never, the majority of coaches I work with, they wouldn't go onto the pitch without knowing what that session needs to look like physiologically, and then they fill in just the tactical and technical components of it. But it's a very good point that your wide players will get overloaded, and then they have to do the most in the games. But on the other side of that, they are physiologically more capable of doing that.
So, Craig, what would be really interesting on that point, because I guess one of the things that often happens is, you know, it all relies on the coach's, I guess, culture towards accepting the information. How does it work in your team in terms of, you know, say between this game and that game? How does, you know, what's the structure in terms of the conversations you guys have ahead of the planning? How do you set that up so that you don't have those little misses?
Well, look, I think one of the points are in performance. I hear way too much that, you know, oh, the coach doesn't listen to me, or, you know, he's old school and that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, if I've ever had those sort of situations, you know, I've got to reflect on myself and see why can't I get a message across. And too often we, you know, people in performance look at things very much in binary. That's black or white, you know, and I think we have to look at ourselves as a fraternity, and I preach that quite often, that we're a small percentage of the parcel here. And we have to look at our coach and our players. They're the client. We have to sit down with them and see what they require from us. And then, you know, my job is to offer insight. But, you know, I'm very much aware of who my boss is. So it's about setting up the systems and the strategy, and then obviously meeting. In an international team, we monitor our players all year. And when you know, for the last 3 years, I've had the fortune to work with Ange, and you know, sitting in our conversations as time moved on, were really about, okay, identifying someone's where they are in respect to their optimal performance. So we were able to create from the data we collect basically an optimal performance index, and you know, so it's a language that he would understand, and he could put two and two together and get the outcome that he requires. But it's very much, and I can't stress this enough, that our job is to, our boss is the head coach. It's not about us. It's a small, we're a small percentage of the parcel, a very important percentage. But, you know, we've had to rebuild sports science. After 4 years, there was a hiatus of sports science, you know, at the FFA level. There was none. And we can sit back and go, okay, that was a problem of the powers that be. No, I think it was, okay, maybe, you know, people's perception of sports science just needed to be changed, because there was too many of us that looked at things very much black or white.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You often hear the fanatics that talk about one direction or another, and, you know, what you're saying there comes through really strongly, is that, you know, at the end of the day, the coach has to make the decisions, and it's the jobs of all of the performance services to give the information in a manner that the coach can understand and analyse the way they need to hear it. And, you know, I think that's very impressive to hear. I'm interested to know, from your point of view, with the international players you say you're monitoring, how much do you get to monitor them when they're with their clubs? Have you got is it about setting up a culture with the guys where they'll, you know, make sure that you know that information, or do you have specific things that you are able to track all the time with them?
Yeah, look, I mean, very much so. It's about creating an environment like that. So since I came in, yeah, every day they're not with us. We will collect data from them. It's about fostering relationships with the clubs as well. I think we're the only international team in the world that my philosophy is on that they belong to a club and they're paid by a club. So on a daily basis, when they're in camp with us, that club will get a report of everything that they've done. A lot of international teams might give a report at the end of the camp. I give it daily. And the reason behind that is I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. But moreover, it's also to create that relationship. So it's a two-way street, so I can access their data in respect to their GPS data or whatever I need to. However, I have had a number of innovations, you know, with relationships we have with certain tech companies and trying to overcome some of those issues and seamless monitoring of players, you know, in respect to the technology that is out there. And it's a space that needs to advance all the time. You have to start with the end in mind. My end is way out there in respect to what I think can be done, and so we've started to really work on that. Particularly, you know, we've done stuff with the Apple Watch, and Apple have been very kind to us in respect to that, and then getting data from there. So if I don't get the GPS data, I get the data basically off that. That's enough for me. Also, you know, we have to remember that RPE and session training load is a well researched and validated and reliable measure. So, that combined with the fatigue data we can collect, it can be done very well. It just takes, again, it's all about your strategy and systems that you implement, and really sitting back and thinking, okay, what am I trying to create there? And it can be done on any budget. It just depends. Whatever your budget is, you can do it. So,
That's really interesting. That fits really well with, I think, some of what we were talking about before. The technology is there. It's actually the culture and the relationships that's important with doing it well, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, everyone wants to use GPS. You know, I've been fortunate. I've been using GPS for a lot of years. And I see a GPS, even though I'm a massive supporter of it, I state, if you don't know how or to make sense of the data, don't use it. Just don't use it. It's going to be absolutely no point for you as well, and if you can't explain that data to a coach. And the other thing is, in the performance field, everyone wants to keep up with the Joneses. You know, I consult a lot throughout, you know, the world in high-performance sport, and then you'll see someone gets a, you know, it used to be someone got an altitude chamber, and, okay, well, the club down the road got an altitude chamber, and now every club's got an altitude chamber, and if you go around them now, most of them are used as storage spaces. So it's about having your philosophy, running your own race, being keeping open to what is being done in the research, making sure it's evidence-based what you're doing, but definitely having a full strategy and knowing what you want to do. More data, you know, absolutely, this happens a lot of the time. More data doesn't necessarily mean better decisions. And I think we need to be really aware of that. And we can be very, very successful on very, very low budgets as long as you know how to really interpret the data and create insight. Our work is all about insight. And, I mean, that's the difference.
Craig, broad question. Hopefully you can narrow it down. And it might differ between juniors and seniors, but you talk about being, like, simple and effective. In regards to physical performance or sports science preparation, what are some, I guess, things that you feel that could or should be implemented at the local or community level?
Well, very much you need to have a very sound structure to your training program, going right back to the basics. Now, you can have a wonderful monitoring program and, fantastic technology, but it all comes down to the actual program that you're implementing. So that needs to have really sound structure with sound planning in respect to that. So, if we're going to use, or we have to use some form of planning, if we're, periodization, I don't want to use that because that has been bullied, that sort of term. But basically, we need to plan effectively based on sound evidence and a sound physiological understanding of the human body. And then we need to do that. The things that are lacking are, even at the lowest level, I mean, if we have to have some concepts of injury prevention, we have to look at the basic components of fitness and how they relate to our game and then train them. It is very, very basic, but that is often not interpreted really well. The thing is also we have to be aware, the basics of programming is first you need to profile your activity. So you need to look at what actually happens in a football game and then train accordingly. And I think that's the most important part. But if we put it into context, I think at the youth level and the lower levels, they're there to play football. So let's use football for them to, to enjoy the game. You know, we don't want to see people running around the pitch with no football if they are there to play football. And but we just need to be conscious, okay, we need to condition them for this specific activity that we're playing.
Craig, thanks so much for joining us here on the High Performance Show. We really appreciate your time. Best of luck with the Socceroos leading up to the World Cup and including the World Cup. Before I let you go, there's lots of talk about the light therapy glasses that the Socceroos used on the plane. I won't ask you about that. I'm sure you've been asked a million times. But have you got any other tricks up your sleeve that you're taking with you to the World Cup?
Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, I'm not into tricks. I just keep to the evidence and what it is. And I mean, those, the stuff that we use, we've used all the way through.
Yeah.
The basic thing is when you're doing travel, you have to manipulate the body clock. You have glasses that enhance, the production of melatonin, and you have glasses that can keep you awake. I'm no rocket scientist. It's just keeping in tune with what you have to actually do. Not into tricks, but I'm sure we'll just have, as much as we can, have an effective program to do the best that we can.
Craig, thanks for joining the show, mate. We really appreciate you spending your time with us.
No, thank you guys for having me and good luck. And I only just got to listen to a small part of it before, but I'll definitely listen again because it's a really great job you're doing and I really appreciate you asking me to come on.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Craig Duncan there, the Socceroos Head of Sports Science.
Did you know there are...
Flick of the button there and Gremlin's in the system, I'm telling you. Gremlin's in the system. Anyway, we are going to take a break here because we are running late and I can see the Clubland boys out there just giving me the daggers, so we better get out of this show. But we'll come back right after the break with a couple of key takeaways here on the High Performance Show. Game on. Welcome back to the High Performance Program here on FNR Football Nation Radio. We are way over time, so let's get on to the end of our program. Bill, what are the two key factors that you took away from today's program?
Well, I'm going to give you one, and it's relationship. I thought both of them touched on that pretty clearly. You know, Mick was talking about making it simple for athletes to make the compliance work, and that's all about building trust and relationship. And obviously, we just heard then from Craig about the importance of building relationship with the coach and altering the way he approaches things to make sure the coach can hear it. And that's everything in sport at the high performance end. If you don't have the relationship, everything else is sort of falls away to the side, I reckon.
Keegan?
I think with touching on again what Bill said, but the simplicity.
Yeah.
But I think the big one was having the relationship, which then allows you to individualise, which both Mick and Craig discussed in regards to individualising the training, or Mick with his older versus younger players. So that relationship is key, so that there is that communication, that honesty and trust, so that then that can happen and you're managing your players and your team collectively.
For me, it was you don't need a big budget to have an S&C program. You don't have to have, you know, tracking devices and, you know, I don't know, any sort of major technology, but you need to have some sort of strength and conditioning program if you want to get the best out of your athletes. And there are plenty of exercise science students out there or bang out of university who would love to get involved in football clubs at all levels of the game. I mean, there are literally so many S&C graduates who just want a chance.
Heaps.
And they will come up.
Heaps.
No, they will come along.
They will, a year.
Exactly. They will come along. They will get involved in your club and they will run programs on your behalf. So get them involved. That's all I can say about that. Day 8, guys, that's the end of the show for 2017. Mm. What a 2017 it has been. Bill, thanks for being a part of it, and we'll see you again in 2018.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, and well done to you guys for everything you're doing in FNR.
Keegan, same to you. Have a very Merry Christmas, and
you too,
we'll see you in 2018.
Thank you.
To all of our listeners out there, thanks for being a part of the High Performance Program. Make sure you join us again in 2018, where we'll bring you plenty more huge guests like we had tonight with the Socceroos Head of Sports Science, Dr. Craig Duncan. We're going to take a break here. Plenty more coming up after the break on FNR Football Nation Radio.
He rose so high.